This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
There's legislation ahead.
When Virginia's General Assembly opens its 2014 session next month, Medicaid, mental health, money for schools, state pensions, transportation, changing standards of education, and a whole new administration will be just some of the topics on state lawmakers' minds. Speaking of lawmakers, two of the state capitol's most influential have agreed to share their thinking with us this hour. Longtime Republican State Senator Emmett Hanger, plus House of Delegates Minority Leader David Toscano. So you are welcome to just sit back and listen. But if you've got thoughts of your own about what you believe Virginia government should be doing, you will be invited to join the conversation right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. 888-WMRA-TALK is the easy way to remember our phone number. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. And we hope you will dial in if you've got any thoughts about what the top priorities for state government should be in the upcoming new year, or if you've got questions for our lawmaker guests. With us by phone right now, although he may make it to the studio any minute now, is Republican State Senator from Augusta County, Emmett Hanger. And here with me in the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, Democratic delegate from Charlottesville and House of Delegates Minority Leader David Toscano. Gentlemen, thank you both so very much for making time for us.
Great to be here, Tom.
Yeah, good to be with you this evening. Look forward to the conversation.
Well, Senator Hanger, to you first, then. Could you give us a sort of a thumbnail sketch of your top priorities for the upcoming 2014 session of the Virginia General Assembly?
Sure. And I would have to say that it's kind of evolving at this point. Sometimes when we go to Richmond, we have an agenda of sorts, and mine is a little bit slow coming together this year. It's kind of in a number of areas. I chair the Agriculture, Conservation, Natural Resources Committee, so I always am involved in a number of issues there. So I have some initiatives dealing with our continued work on cleaning up the Chesapeake Bay. We feel like we're making and have made good progress. So we've got some funding issues, which I'll be focusing on some budget language and perhaps some amendments to the budget to complement what the governor has announced today. And then we've done a lot of work on point source with our wastewater treatment plant upgrades and with our agriculture best management practices, and we're beginning to focus more effort on stormwater management. We had some legislation a couple years ago, which regulations have been issued now, and it is scheduled to go into effect this coming year, the middle of the year, July 1st. Which is going to put new requirements on local governments as far as managing stormwater. So that's an area where we'll be looking at with some possible tweaks to the legislation to make it more accommodating to what can actually be accomplished and get some of the funding in place. We might want to talk a little more this afternoon on some of the hot topics right now. Obviously, mental health. I chair the funding subcommittee of finance. Health and Human Resources that deals with our mental health system, our Medicaid, health care, social services, and all of that. So I'm involved in the conversations right now about where we need to go with some of our mental health delivery system. That's something obviously we've been working on for a number of years, but I'll have some initiatives in that area from legislation and budget initiatives perhaps. So That will be a focal area, and in general, I think it's going to be a session where we try to develop a working relationship with the new administration. So, been involved in some conversations earlier today with some of the old folks and the new folks about what the priorities will be, and some of that is obvious with what you read about newspaper every day. Some of it is not so obvious that will kind of come into focus as we move along with the session.
David Toscano, same question for you, your thumbnail sketch of your top priorities for the coming session?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Tom. You had me here last year at this time, and I think we were talking about transportation and transportation and transportation. And it was amazing to me to see that we were able to get a bipartisan transportation bill passed out of both the Senate and the House and signed by the governor that did a lot of wonderful things. And sometimes we forget that. But this year we're going to have to defend that bill. There will be bills in that will try to gut the transportation bill. And if you recall, the only way that bill passes out of the House is with the Democrats basically lining up in block to get it passed. The Republicans in the House couldn't get it passed. The Senate was a lot easier. But that was a good thing. So this year, I think the focus is going to be on a couple of areas. So one is developing this relationship with the new administration. We have a Democratic governor now, and as Senator Hanger said, you know, trying to figure out what that relationship is going to be like and how he operates, I think is going to be critical. But beyond that, this is the year that the legislature infuses more money into education, K through 12 education. We call it by a phrase calling it's called the re-benchmarking for the standards of quality, which is quite a mouthful to try to swallow. But the long and short of it is we try to figure out how much money does it cost to provide a sound education to Virginia youngsters and how do we get that money to the localities. And there will be a debate about how much money should go in the pot for those things. Beyond that, there'll be new money, I think, proposed in the area of mental health. And a lot of questions on the priorities that are going to be embodied in Governor McDonald's two-year budget, which he has proposed and which he leaves us with as he moves out of office. So Senator Hanger just came in the room.
He just
welcome
magic.
Aboard.
We just
welcome aboard.
Lost his cell phone signal and he walked in the studio. And we haven't have his microphone turned on now, but we also have our first phone call coming in. I think this is Jason from Nellysford. Jason, thank you for joining us here on Virginia. Yeah, and I mispronounced it already. It's Nellysford. Jason, are you there?
Yes. Yes,
your
I'm
question
here.
Or comment for sure. Your question or comment for Senator Emmett Hanger and or Senator Hanger, we need you to put the headset on so that you can hear the call. And sitting next to Senator Hanger is House of Delegates Minority Leader David Toscano. Jason, go ahead.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking my call, guys. And I have an issue that I feel very passionate about. It's industrial hemp. And I wanted to see about what Virginia was going to do this year, 2014. We're seeing, you know, Kentucky and all these other states around us that are light years ahead of Virginia in this issue. And what are we going to do, you know, to look at this? What, you know, the farming industry, the environmental aspects, jobs, tax revenue, and take it from there.
David Toscano, your predecessor in the House of Delegates, the man that you succeeded, Mitch Voorhees, this was a big issue for him. And he left the legislature, 8 years ago?
Yes. And
passed away a couple of years ago.
Right. And periodically we see this again. You know, the chances of getting anything done much on this are probably pretty slim. I haven't seen all the bills that have been introduced. There'll probably be something in there in this session on this. It might be a study kind of bill. I think the caller does raise an interesting question because there's some economic benefits that can be derived from this. And I think everybody focuses on the sort of the pot linkage, but they probably shouldn't just be focused on that. There are other things that this can be used for besides people smoking marijuana, and we shouldn't get caught stuck on that one. But I haven't seen any legislation that's been introduced. I think it's going to be hard to get much passed on this issue now, but you never know. Every new year brings new opportunities.
Senator Hanger, you used to actually be in the House of Delegates when Mitch Voorhees used
Mitch
to... Mitch Vanieres, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. used to bring this up, mm-hmm. and he sort of just generated chuckles. Nobody ever thought anything would happen with it.
Uh-huh.
Where do you stand on it now all these years later?
I would support, I suppose, and I have to be careful about that because I chair the Agriculture Committee. I'm all for, you know, increasing opportunities for agriculture production. But we've never done, in my opinion, at least that I'm aware of, a serious study. You know, it's one of those things where we've talked about it. We've had people come to Richmond who presented us factual information. about the benefits that could be derived from raising industrial hemp. But we always get sidetracked with the concerns from the marijuana usage, which is a cousin of some of these products. And I'm not an expert. I don't claim to be an expert. There's a different front out there now, too, as a couple of the states have moved forward with the legalization of marijuana. And, we're light years behind here in Virginia in some respects, but there's always a bit of caution. And but I would support some form of study if we could quantify some of the benefits, opportunities that might be there, and then also looking at the flip side, some of the concerns that would still be there as well.
In many people's mind, you talk about hemp and marijuana comes up, but as our caller Jason is identifying, most experts seem to think that industrial hemp is light years, to use your phrase, Senator, away from recreational marijuana, and a completely different plant, completely different use. But as long as marijuana is now on the table, David Toscano, you know I was going to ask you this. Is Virginia ever going to move towards medical marijuana?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if some point in the near future something like that comes up. I think there are a lot of experiments going on out there right now with medical marijuana and legalization in at least one state. And I think a lot of folks are going to want to look at that to see how it really works. The argument has always been that you can tax it and raise substantial monies. Beyond that, there are a lot of medicinal purposes for marijuana, and that's why medical marijuana through prescription has been approved in a number of states. I think it's probably too early for Virginia to do something like this, but I think as you have more experience in other places, some of the public's ambivalence or objections to this might go away because they see that maybe the problems aren't as great as people anticipated.
Jason, thank you so very much for your call. We are coming to you today from the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, but our call-in number is the same as always, 888-WMRA-TALK. Got a suggestion for what you want Virginia's General Assembly to focus on during its 2014 session? A question for our lawmaker guests by phone 888-967-2825, or you can post to us on Facebook where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And Sarah has this question on our Facebook page. Gentlemen, whatever happened to nonpartisan redistricting? Senator Hanger?
Well, it's a subject that comes up frequently. Of course, we actually only engage in the partisan redistricting every 10 years. We're required to redraw the lines. But there are those that in the aftermath of each effort at doing that realize it's not a very good process and would like to see it improved. So the senator for this area, Senator Deeds, has been an advocate for that, as have others.
And you've supported that legislation.
I have supported it, it has merits. Those who support it think that it might be a cure-all, that should take the politics out of it. I don't think that could happen, but it perhaps could be an improvement to the system that we have currently in place, which is driven by gerrymandering, where the party, you have to be very, very honest and upfront about it, the party that's in control at the particular time in the body, whether it's the House or the Senate, to the full extent of the law that they can, they use gerrymandering to protect their current and future interests.
I've been a longtime supporter of a nonpartisan redistricting commission that would draw the lines every 10 years. I've put in bills. I've supported Senator Deeds' initiative. I've supported the bills that have come over from the Senate to the House. I believe that constituents ought to choose their representatives rather than the other way around. And I think that if we had nonpartisan redistricting, it probably would lower some of the partisan bickering. The blockage here is in the House. We're a 50-50 state here in Virginia, 50% Democrats, 50% Republicans, and yet there are 68 out of 100 seats held by Republicans in the House, and that's only
because
of redistricting.
Partisan redistricting, yeah. We're going to continue our conversation here with House of Delegates Minority Leader David Toscano and longtime Republican State Senator Emmett Hanger in just a bit more than 1 minute. Philip and Stanton, you'll be our next call when we get back. With me here in the studio of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, 24th District State Senator Emmett Hanger, a Republican, and 57th District Delegate and House of Delegates Minority Leader David Toscano, a Democrat. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We've got Philip from Stanton joining us. Philip, thanks for your call, your question or comment for our guests, please.
Hey, sir. Thank you for taking my call. This question is in regards to the National Guard. I'm an officer of the Guard. And one thing that we've been noticing over the past couple of years is that we're obviously having a decrease in funding, both from the federal government and from the state. And so that's having an impact on both retention and recruitment, as well as the fieldings of equipment that are coming to us, not having complete kits in some cases. And that's having an impact on our ability to do emergency management duties when we're called upon by the governor. I was just wondering if the legislators this year are going to take a look at how we're going forward with our defense of the Commonwealth.
Well, this is David, and you know, I think this is so important that we really have to take a look at it. I don't know what's in the governor's budget on this point because he just released it today, and he was broad brushing it, and so he wasn't going deep into the. Into the budget in terms of the funding for National Guard, but I'm assuming that people are going to look at that carefully. I mean, it's just it's unconscionable that we should have people out in the field without adequate kits to do their work, and I don't think the legislature has any interest in that, and I'd hope we take a quick look at it, clear look at it. And I know Senator Hanger is on finance in the Senate. He sees this all the time. I'm sure he's going to take a careful look.
Certainly will, and appreciate your service. I had the opportunity to serve in the Virginia Guard as an infantry officer many years ago up in the Harrisonburg area. Well, the funding stream, as you indicated, is largely federal, and we're driven in large part by the federal budget, while there is some state money that is allocated for various support and benefits for guardsmen. I believe, you know, and this is reaching to the federal level rather to Richmond right at the moment, but I believe the budget agreement that was reached just this past week, which at least did an end run around sequestration for the short run, will allow the Defense Department to allocate more sufficiently to the Guard being obviously more critical to the frontline mission these days than it was back when I served in the years after Vietnam. So it's something we'll take a look at, but we're going to have to lobby our congressmen to look out for our guardsmen here in Virginia in large part.
Well, Tom, you know, can I comment one more thing on that? You know, the sequestration that has occurred in Washington and the government shutdown is something that is really – it's had quite an impact on Virginia. I think Senator Hanger will probably confirm this, but for all the time that I've been in the General Assembly, Virginia typically outperforms the rest of the country in terms of job growth, revenue enhancement, et cetera. This year, Virginia is behind the rest of the country in terms of coming out of the recession and in terms of revenue increases. And that's because of this sequestration. I mean, I think it's been pretty outrageous that they tried to shut down the government back several months ago because it hurts Virginia much more than it hurt the rest of the country. And yet we had a number of our congressmen right there with the folks who wanted to shut it down. You know, we need to call them to account because they're hurting the Commonwealth of Virginia. I hope this budget deal that looks like it's going to pass through the Congress is going to make it a lot easier to fund the critical services that Virginians consider important from the federal government. And I hope that we won't return to this brinkmanship that we saw a month ago with the government shutdown.
Philip, thank you so very much for your call. And Senator Hanger, in case you wanted chime in on more of what David was saying, I think our next call has to do with funding stream concerns as well. Mm-hmm. We're going to Charlottesville. Mary, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for Senator Emmett Hanger and or Delegate David Toscano, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I'm always acutely aware of the amount of money we're spending on education and for the K through 12 part of our population, and yeah, I get distressed because there's a huge part of our population that has graduated from 12th grade and is still in dire need of education. And a lot of that is served by public libraries. People can go and research things, use the computer, but there's a continuing misperception that the library is more of an entertainment place, a community, you know, center kind of place, when in fact it serves a huge role in continuing education. And yet the money for the libraries is a struggle. Our state funding has gone up after many years of being cut back. It's gone up a little bit, but local funding is really hard to secure for public libraries. And I feel like politicians share a misperception about the educational merits of the library. So I guess my question is, how do we change that? How do we get some of that education money to our non-K through 12 people who are in need of continuing their education?
You raise a good point, and I think a part of the solution is education of policymakers and the general public. You indicated there's a reluctance at the local government level, and I think that is a fact. There are a lot of pressures on local governments right now for funding. At the same time, there is a tremendous pushback on taxes and fees of any type. So that, you know, they've got a tough job to do. At the state level, we had reduced funding, but we have a formula there which if you fully fund, it's called full funding for libraries, and I do support that. We made some progress in this last biennial budget, but we're still short of what would be called full funding for our libraries throughout the Commonwealth. So I can only assure you that you will support full funding. I don't have a dollar figure in my head right at this moment, but it's not an extremely high number to plug in to achieve that full funding. Local governments, it is a matter of educating policymakers at the local level as well as the state level so that we continue to recognize that libraries have not become obsolete.
You know, we're uniquely blessed in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area. We have a wonderful regional system. And I think because we are regional, I think we get a little extra money than other places that are going alone libraries. At the same time, I mean, look what happened when we tried to build the Crozet Library in Albemarle. There was a lot of resistance from folks in Albemarle. Eventually, the supporters of the library prevailed, and there's a beautiful facility out there that allows people access to a wealth of information they otherwise would not get, as well as it serving as a community resource for meetings, et cetera, that goes broader in benefit than just serving a single individual or two or three or 15 who want to get more education. It's a way people come together to interact and learn more about their community. So that, I think they're critically important. And like the senator, I support the full funding of the library system in the Commonwealth.
Mary, thank you so very much for your call. So here's another topic we haven't yet gotten to. I want to ask you listening, is Virginia spending enough money on transportation? Are you satisfied that the Commonwealth's highways and roads and bridges and tunnels are as good as they need to be? Taxes and fees did go up earlier this year to bring more money into the state's transportation fund. The hike you may have been most likely to notice is the extra 0.3 cents added to the state sales tax. Is that higher tax a good idea? Is it enough? So, you who are listening are welcome to join us on Virginia Insight by calling us at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Whether it's transportation or anything else that you'd like to talk to Delegate David Toscano and or Senator Emmett Hanger about. I think we're going next to Grotto's Joy. Thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
For each of the people you have on, has to do with the plans, if any, or the possibilities, if any, of the Virginia legislature addressing improving Virginia's renewable energy profile, both from the standpoint of a real RPS standard and otherwise activity that might promote greater use of renewable energies. Thanks.
House of Delegates Minority Leader David Toscano. This is actually something you've been working on.
Well, it's a great question. A lot of us have been working on it. For those in your listening office, listening
region, area,
audience who don't realize what this is, an RPS is a renewable portfolio standard. It's a potentially a standard by which a utility decides to buy a certain percentage of its energy from renewable resources, wind, solar, and sometimes even nuclear. We have a voluntary standard in Virginia, so the utilities do not have to meet the standard. Some folks, including myself, think we ought to have a mandatory standard, which would require the utilities to buy a certain percentage of their energy from renewable sources, and therefore kickstart the renewable resources energy field in Virginia. I think you're not going to see a lot this session on that. I think that the governor, this would have to be a gubernatorial led effort. I think he's probably going to focus on things that have to do with improving efficiencies and energy use. He has supported a mandatory renewable portfolio standard in the past, so I think you might see something in the future. But he's going to have to be laser focused on the things that he has talked about in his campaign: jobs in the economy, reform in the standards of learning, mental health reform, those sorts of things. And so I don't think you'll see much effort on that front this session. But you will see it, I think, before he's done with his stint.
The I think the questioner imposing her question indicated, you know, a bit of background knowledge about the situation using the term RPS. So we are voluntary here, and we've not, you know, we are those who are paying close attention to this and what's going on in other states are a bit concerned that we haven't been more aggressive in Virginia. The common argument that, and of course, the big player in Virginia, Dominion Power. The big argument that they would present when we're looking at this type of thing is the cost to the consumer. You know, we are all wanting to be environmentally conscious and good stewards of the environment, and yet, you know, they break it down to the cost to the consumer and the return on investment for the stockholders and that type of scenario. Now, I have looked at this as far as renewables. Particularly in work with the Chesapeake Bay Commission, where we're trying to find like alternatives for some of the cropland in Virginia, and there are things like switchgrass that could be utilized, which could be a great agricultural product if we were doing things of that, a renewable resource. We've also looked at on a small scale helping the Bay by burning poultry litter, doing things of that sort, and some of those activities are ongoing. Dominion is interested in and some of the co-ops interested in becoming players as some of these markets develop for solar renewables as such. Some getting away from as much reliance on fossil fuels, but the caller is correct. We are and Delegate Toscano as well. That we've not been very aggressive in that area. And, you know, I think it will take time. And as he indicated, and I believe he's correct, it's not something that's going to happen without a significant push from whoever is in power, the administration, with making a concerted effort. Although incrementally, I think there are some discussions ongoing that would cause us to advance a little bit. And in Virginia, if you advance a little bit, you know, that's something.
Joy, thank you so very much for your call. If you've just joined us, we have here in the Virginia Insight studio, member of the Virginia House of Delegates from Charlottesville and Democratic Minority Leader in that House, David Toscano. Sitting next to him, member of the Virginia Senate from Augusta County, Republican Emmett Hanger. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Call-in number easy to remember as 888-WMRA-TALK. You can also reach us on Facebook, where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And we have this gentleman on Facebook from Lawrence, who says, now that higher taxes have gone into effect to pay for transportation improvements, What is that money being used for, and what improvements, if any, are already being made?
Well, lots of things. I mean, first of all, with the bill that was passed last session, we had the first dedicated source of money for passenger rail that's ever been seen in the Commonwealth. So if you live in the corridor between Lynchburg and D.C., and ultimately the corridor between Roanoke in D.C., you're going to have a continued rail service. The same thing would be true in Richmond to D.C. and in the corridor that runs from Norfolk over to Richmond. Eventually, you're going to have more passenger service. You've got more money in the pipeline for mass transit and for a rail to Dulles if you live in Northern Virginia. Beyond that, if you're living in a more rural area, there's more money going to be invested in making sure your bridges are properly maintained. A lot of our bridges are substandard, and we need to invest in those. And we're going to be building roads where they are needed. Now, we don't have as great a need for roads to be built in our areas of the Commonwealth, but we certainly need them to be resurfaced so that when people out there are driving down the road, they don't hit a pothole and it costs them $500 to fix their front-end alignment. So these are really practical things that are being put into place. I think we're going to have to really closely monitor how VDOT spends its money to make sure it's efficiently done. The legislature is not going to tolerate, after all the years it took fighting to get a package, that any of this money is going to be wasted.
I agree with David that it did increase over time the funding flows. I still had issues with it, and I think some of us haven't let go yet. It's going to be something that will be continued to work on, and I believe that's appropriate. One of the problems from the last time that there was a major initiative with transportation, everything, well, we fixed that, and then so they didn't do anything for decades. Well, I think you have to continue to work on it, particularly from the rural areas. Granted, there will be some additional funding, but most of the focus was on the urban areas. Northern Virginia, Hampton Roads, where, in fact, additional abilities to raise revenue were created in those regions. Statewide, one of the problems that I continue to have with the package was that we're diverting general fund dollars into transportation now that should have continued to go to basic core services. So you're sharing that demand across into transportation now. The other, I've been an advocate for user fees, and I thought that the fuel tax was a wonderful user fee, and we've actually reduced that. Makes no sense to me, but we reduced the fuel tax.
Yeah, we ought to explain that a little, because the nature of the tax changed. It used to be a per-gallon retail tax, mm-hmm. and it went to a wholesale tax.
Right.
And really, what you're saying, Senator Hanger, is that the end result right now, because the wholesale price is down, is that the state government is getting less on its tax on gasoline than if it had stayed as a retail tax.
Well, the upshot of it was, with the changes that were made, we were at 18.3 cents per gallon. Well, with the changes, it went down to, on average now, 11 cents per gallon,
But the state is getting more money based on the other taxes.
On the other taxes.
That's right, but it shifts the burden away from the motorist who drives on the road and the trucker who uses the road to everybody in the Commonwealth who has to pay increased mm-hmm. sales tax. That's why I didn't like that particular mechanism, and I don't think mm-hmm. Senator Hanger did either.
Yeah. I'm sorry that we've got to pause for the break, but we can continue this conversation with Senator Hanger and Delegate Toscano, and we will in just a bit more than 1 minute. Former professor of sociology and former mayor of Charlottesville, current member of the Virginia House, Democrat from Charlottesville, David Toscano is one of our guests. Mr. Toscano also serves as minority leader in the House of Delegates, former member of the House of Delegates, but since 1996 serving in the Virginia State Senate, Republican from Augusta County. Emmett Hanger is our other guest. Our call-in number, 888-WMRA-TALK. But before we get to any more listener input, it sounded like both you gentlemen wanted to talk some more about transportation and funding for transportation.
Well, just a couple more comments, because I think it needs to evolve a little further. I was glad that we were able to do some things, particularly for Northern Virginia in the Hampton Roads area. But just to retract there a bit, we had in place 17.5 cents per gallon, which is a user fee. There's also a federal component, which is a little over 18, about 18.3 cents. In lieu of that, we put in place a percentage tax at the wholesale level and pegged it to a fixed date in time. So it's yielding a little over 11 cents per gallon. So in my mind, that didn't make sense because a user fee is a good concept. And as a conservative, I think people who use the road should pay at least a significant portion of that ability to use
the road. And the 17.5 cent state tax that was in effect until this past July had been at that level for more than 25 years, back in the time when you were in the House of Delegates.
You're right. It had gone back into the 1986, I think, when Governor Biles was there.
And it was one of the lower, if not one of the lowest, retail gas taxes in the country.
Right.
Now you're saying we've gone even lower.
There's another component out there in this agreement that was passed that a lot of people wouldn't have focused on yet. We have now this dynamic where people are buying more and more of their products, making more of their purchases online, internet sales. Currently, we do not systematically tax that. It's subject to tax, but we have no mechanism for taxing it. Congress is about hopefully going to act on that in the not too distant future. If they do, that money then will be allocated. That what would be general fund dollars is going to be allocated to transportation and a little bit of it to education. They were trying to gather votes to get this package to sail. Well, if it doesn't pass in Congress, if we don't get that ability by a fixed date that's built into legislation, then there will be an additional increase in the fuel tax. And that'll be a sleeper that people will be coming – that'll be coming at them if we don't fix this some way in the not-too-distant future.
Yes. When Governor McDonnell put through his package, he was proposing – that we take into account this internet tax. And a lot of us were saying, oh, well, you know, you're going to count on Washington to pass something that's going to do something good. And so we haven't seen it yet. We might see it. But I think Senator Hanger is right. If that doesn't come to pass, the fuel tax will rise again. I think Senator Hanger and I are in sync on this idea of user fees. I didn't really like the package in terms of how the funding was put together because it raised the sales tax. And typically, that'll make it much more difficult to raise the sales tax in the future. And the sales tax is what we use to help fund education, public safety, mental health, a lot of the things that people really consider very, very important. And you're by doing it this way, you made it more difficult, I think, and a greater burden on the state budget that would come out of education. So I didn't really like the way that financing was put together, but we had to get a transportation bill because if we didn't get one, it could have been five more years before we had a real shot.
Changes to the Virginia education system's standards of learning, what to do about proposed expansion of the state's Medicaid rolls, how to improve mental health services in the Commonwealth. If you've got opinions on any of these topics or anything else that you think is likely to come up before state lawmakers when their 2014 legislative session gets underway next month, we got the phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Questions welcome too. By phone, that's 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And Senator Hanger and Delegate Toscano, we have this from Jenny on our Facebook page. What role will the General Assembly play in deciding the state attorney general's race?
You want me to take it? It's David, and I hope no role.
But this, it could.
It could play a role. And
at this point, the race is separated by 165 votes. With the Democrat, Mark Herring, in the lead over Mark Obenshain. They're both colleagues of Senator Hanger in the state Senate.
Yes, and there is a scenario in which this election gets kicked into the General Assembly. If one of the two candidates files a petition which alleges that there should be a contest, that there are so-called irregularities that have influenced the result of the election, And then under that scenario, that the whole thing can be kicked into the General Assembly for a majority vote of the bodies serving together to decide. We think that's unlikely because we don't think that Senator Obenchain is the kind of Virginian who would put himself at risk and the Commonwealth at risk of people believing that the election was stolen by a political process just because someone had control and could do it. Right now, the election has been certified that Senator Herring has won. The recount has begun, and if the recount shows that at the end Senator Herring has won, I hope that Senator Obenchain will simply concede that and recognize that there aren't sufficient irregularities in the process to overturn the process. I think Virginia would never be the same if something like that would occur, and then the election of the people would be reversed by a small group of delegates and senators.
And I would agree. I would hope that it wouldn't come in front of the assembly. I believe that the statute that's there or the precedent is there for doing this type of thing, for it coming in front of the assembly, is valid. But in my mind, it would have to be a significant occurrence that triggered it. Something, you know, where there were flagrant manipulations of the electoral process, and then you have a remedy. What we have now, it appears, you know, is just a very close contest where on the fringes of it, you know, you might be able to disqualify a vote or two or find a vote here and there. And so I would hope, using, you know, objective standards, that the count proceeds. And then unless something would be discovered just totally off the map that, you know, that created a situation where the General Assembly, I agree that, you know, it's good to have a safeguard like that. But I don't. I don't think there would be anything like that out there that would cause that to be appropriate, if you will, is the way I would address it. The process in Virginia, at least in my opinion, what I've observed for a number of years, has a lot of integrity to it. You know, it's not easily manipulated. If you go back in history, I think James Madison won an election because he served rum at the polling places. Now, you know that.
I haven't found that irregularity. But, you know, Senator Obenchain and Senator Herring are both very honorable people. And it's hard for me to imagine, even though they have very big differences in policy and political philosophy, it's hard for me to imagine either one of them trying to use this remedy unless there's some flagrant irregularity that we've not seen yet. So hopefully that doesn't occur.
Going next to Charlottesville, Peter, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for Republican State Senator Emmett Hanger and or Democratic House of Delegates Minority Leader David Toscano, please.
Hi. Certainly the question is directed to both gentlemen. And going back to the question of user fees and taxes, and here we have a case where a Democrat and Republican both agree that the result was, say, less than optimal. And I agree totally. I think you really want to go in the direction of user fees as much as possible. Put the burden, you know, where the benefit is. So the question is, something went wrong. In other words, it seems like pretty obviously we didn't do the right thing. What can you imagine? How can you imagine changing the process, changing the legislature, so that we get better results?
Good question, but tough to address. Sometimes there's a built-in resistance to an action, and in this instance, I think is a good example of that. There had been, you know, sometimes bipartisan efforts to address the fact that with increasing fuel efficiency in vehicles and your tax based on, you know, the consumption of gasoline at a per gallon, that the easy way to fix that would be to increase the gas tax, so that if you're driving a vehicle that's getting 40 miles to a gallon, and if you theoretically doubled the tax and you used to be getting 20 miles a gallon, there was no harm done. You're still getting, you're still using the road just as much as you used to, and it's not really costing you anymore. That argument didn't prevail. As most are aware, they're right or wrong, and sometimes it is right and sometimes it is wrong. There's a built-in resistance or anti-tax segment of the population. Certainly there should be a conservative bent to have appropriate tax and fair tax, but there's just a downright push at some levels to be anti-tax. You can't do anything about taxes. So that really prevailed for a long time, and it was crippling our transportation system. The governor attempted to put a package together that was to be sold as revenue neutral. I'm not sure how you accomplish your goals if you need more revenue and make it revenue neutral, but that was seemingly the goal. But it kind of, that initiative kind of came apart. And then to bring compromise, a lot of things were fed into the solution that individually help somebody come to the table and vote for the package. But then when you put the whole thing together, in my opinion, it left a little bit to be desired. So such is the legislative process sometimes. And it's for those of us that are in policy making decisions to continue to shed light on that and try to come up with appropriate solutions rather than sometimes what ends up having a hodgepodge that just misses the mark.
You know, the politics of this is the barriers have always been in the House, not in the Senate. The Senate has sent the House a number of bills over the years that have increased the gas tax on the theory that people who use the roads ought to pay for them. And while it's not a perfect user fee, a better one would be a miles travel tax, but it was a good solution. And the House would always turn it down. So
you end up with compromise almost always getting something that doesn't please anybody.
Doesn't fit everything.
And I need to stop you there, David, only because we're just about to run out of time. And there's one topic. Peter, thank you so much for your call. We have not addressed yet that I know both of you are very interested in. I'm going to go to you first, Emmett Hanger, because it's Republicans who seem to have mixed feelings on this, at least between Republicans in the Senate and Republicans in the House. And that's whether or not Virginia might at some future time accept expanding Medicaid as is encouraged by so-called federal Obamacare.
Okay. Well, it's a tough subject to address in maybe 60 seconds, but let me begin. The Affordable Care Act was advanced, and I think whether you're Republican, Democrat, or indifferent to politics in general, you need to recognize that the cost of health care in this nation is on an unsustainable course. And I think we just have to recognize that. We have a pretty good system of care, but more and more people are being priced out. They can't afford insurance, or they can't afford health care, or they end up in crisis after delaying appropriate health care and end up in an emergency room with a bad outcome.
So, Senator, it's my fault for waiting so long in the show to do this. But you're right. We've only got a little bit more than a minute left. So let me outline the question this way. Under the proposed expansion of Medicaid, the federal government for the first 3 years would cover 100% of adding about 400,000 more Virginians to Medicaid rolls. And then after that three-year time frame, it would go down to 90%, and Virginia would have to pay for 10% of the increased cost from then on.
Right.
Is that ever going to happen in Virginia?
The short answer is yes, but it's not going to happen easily, in my opinion. We need to do it because the Supreme Court ruled that states can make that decision, but it's fundamental to the changes that we're seeing under the Affordable Care Act in that our hospitals, and I apologize, I'll try to short-circuit this, the funding streams that were available to our hospitals are going away in terms of indigent care, disproportionate share, serving people who show up without insurance. Medicare, the Hospital Association nationally agreed to reduce rates to hospitals as a part of funding the Affordable Care Act. If we don't, we're going to leave a lot of people without a way to receive care, and we're also going to bankrupt some of our rural hospitals.
So with the 30 seconds we've got left, you do see a way forward toward expanding Medicaid coverage for the poor in Virginia?
I think we're going to be able to extend a mechanism for care, but it has to be with reforms. And we're already busy working on those reforms.
15 seconds left. I would guess what you're hearing from Senator Hanger pleases you.
Senator Hanger's worked very hard on this, and he's going to make sure we have a reform package in place so that we can do what we need to do. I call it Medicaid enhancement rather than Medicaid expansion, because it's got to have reforms as well as expansion. If you are worried about getting served in a rural area, you better be very, very worried if we don't do this, because a lot of those rural hospitals will face real financial crunches.
You know,
a lot
we
of
have to get
be served.
The two of you back in studio together and find a way to have you here for 3 hours, because it's always wonderful when we have you on the show. Our guests have been 57th District House of Delegates member, Democrat from Charlottesville, as well as House Democratic Minority Leader David Toscano, plus Republican from Augusta County, 24th District State Senator Emmett Hanger. Gentlemen, thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
Virginia Insight's Executive Director Matt Bingay, our Associate Producers Bob Levicky and Terry Ward. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell, Elliot Majerzik, Jesse Dukes, and Andrew Windham at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. You can find postings of Virginia Insight's on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org, and when you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will find links to more information about our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.